And hi, my name is Jared Griffin. I'm your host for Talk of the Rock today, and I got a really special group of people in the studio with me. We got a play coming up this weekend, and so I really like to host the episodes of Talk of the Rock that deal with performing arts and theater arts, of course, because I'm a theater nerd. And so we got a play coming up this week with the Kodiak High School Drama Club and the Shakespeares called You Can't Take It With You by George Kaufman and Moss Hart. Moss Hart. Classic play from 1936. And so I have a few of the cast members here to come talk about the show and talk about their process and just how funny and witty and heartwarming this play is. So let's just go around the room, and we might have one or two others join us later on because they're just running over here from lunch at high school. So thank you all for spending your lunchtime with me. We'll start over here to my left. Just introduce yourself, and what character do you play in this play?
Hi, my name is Delaney Glenn. I'm a freshman, and I play Mrs. Kirby and the Grand Duchess Olga Katrina.
Double billed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hi, my name is Holly Olson. I'm a junior, and I am playing Essie Carmichael.
Hello, my name is Ivan Wellner. I am a freshman, and I am playing Mr. Kirby.
Oh gosh, we got two freshmen and they're married.
It's
Ew. Let's not go into
that.
This is live, man.
This is live. Okay, so we were thinking of a spring play to do because I thought, yeah, I think we can probably fit one in this spring. And you guys, I gave you a short list of many plays, to think about, and y'all chose and voted on this one. So, let's give the audience what is the kind of a plot breakdown of what goes on in You Can't Take It With You.
I would say that it is a rom-com set in the 1930s, and it is between the Sycamore family and the Kirby family, where I can explain as much as I want, right? Or
Yeah, I don't think there are any like big plot twists
okay.
in this
Well,
in this play, really.
Yeah, so Grandpa dies, actually. I'm kidding.
Okay. Our romantic lead is Alice Sycamore, the youngest daughter of the Sycamores. And
One of them.
she falls in love with Anthony Kirby Jr. So the Sycamores are a very wacky family with very interesting quirks. They kind of just have a whole bunch of people. They're very lively. They love to live. They romanticize life to the fullest, and there's a beauty in that. And then there's the Kirbys, and I think the Kirbys can explain themselves.
Oh yes, we
Yeah.
have the Kirbys here.
The family is very like strict, uptight. We're bankers, right? So we're
Yeah.
like prim, proper. Money, status, like the show that we put on.
Yeah.
Wall
It's
Street.
basically the it's basically the
Hey, man.
exact opposite of the Sycamore family, where Tony hails from a family that is just not like them at all. And
Stiff.
Stiff, yeah.
Tony wants his family to see this other family that loves and cares for other people. He wants love and like
I
and
like
the
Sycamores, they
explain
just have like joy and life to them, and the
it,
Kirbys are very opposite of that.
I like to think that the Kirbys are the more serious parts of life, like they mirror the more like practical and
Absolutely.
Things that you really need to understand about making a life for yourself, while the Sycamores, they represent the beauty you must find there, because there is a line between the balance and the order, left brain versus right brain.
Yeah.
And so the Kirbys, they're very like Mr. Kirby, he's a businessman. He's making a life for himself. And in my English class, in my American literature class, we've been going over the American dream, quote unquote. So I feel like they really attribute to they really amount to the standard of that, while the Sycamores, they also do so in their own way due to how America or American cultures like settled around making your own identity, making there your you own go. Life. Mm-hmm. And the Sycamores, they love, they just express everything that they would love to do. They're very passionate about everything. Like Paul and Penny, they have, they're very interesting. They have their interest and
really so, creative hobbies.
Exactly. And it's very, the way I like at the end how they kind of find the balance between the two. Well, not really, but it's sort of like they find an ease between the two families.
You can see a beginning.
Yeah. I thought of it a little bit, and I thought about, like, I feel like the Kirbys will bring a sort of grounding to the Sycamores, but not, like, encumbering them, but more so like
you got to pay your taxes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean you can.
Grandpa certainly doesn't.
Yes, the Sycamore family, they don't like paying their taxes, or they don't, it's not that they don't like, they don't care.
Yeah.
About paying their taxes.
It's not something they're worried about.
Yeah. Yeah. Like there's definitely and this is, you brought up American literature. This is one of the core tensions in American culture and American identity, is that individuality versus conformity.
Yeah.
Versus the societal demands mm-hmm.
That's kinda,
on your identity.
That is a huge difference, because the Kirby family, like Mr. Kirby wants his son to go into the family business like mm-hmm. they have for years. And the Sycamores are just like, yeah, do whatever, have fun, live your life.
Yeah.
That's very much like the vibe of Grandpa.
Just don't hurt other people.
Yeah.
No premises.
So that's what makes it, we call this play a classic American comedy, because it hits just at those tensions between Americans and just different takes on the quote, right, American dream.
And it's funny.
And it's, this is very much, it's a Romeo and Juliet kind of story, right? You've got two houses, you know, and star-crossed lovers. Do it.
Both alike in dignity.
Both alike in their own dignity, absolutely.
Also set in Verona, guys.
And so the Arts Council did Romeo and Juliet last month, early March. And this is kind of a counter take on star-crossed lovers from two different houses, both alike in dignity. And I mean, I guess we probably shouldn't mention, you know, all the murder that happens in Act 3, should we?
Yeah. No.
Just kidding. There's no murder.
It's kind of like, it's kind of like Romeo and Juliet was in the 20s, and it made sense to most people.
sure.
Well, you know, it's the context. It's a, you know, a culture that's coming out of the Great Depression, but has not yet entered into World War II. So there's this kind of interesting space that the country was in.
I like how I love stories that are set in the in the 20th century, because you got to remember how young America is mm-hmm. and like but we have like a very established culture already, which in my opinion I'd say
yeah.
So.
And I mean, yeah, especially this time, the early 20th century, America was still trying to figure out its identity.
Exactly.
World War One had ended, the crash, immigration was big.
Yeah.
Totally.
Isolationism was big at that time. So, yeah, it's kind of a little this play is a microcosm mm-hmm. of a lot of those things. We're just now joined in the studio by Lydia Dagan. Let me put you up on a microphone. Lydia, can you introduce yourself, and what character do you play?
Hello, my name is Lydia, and I am playing Reba, the maid. She is very much into the chaos of the Sycamore family, but also has, like, perspective to know what they need before they do.
Mm,
yes.
That's a great way to describe it.
That is a very...
I love that.
She is the glue. That keeps this family together, and I mean, it's a huge cast.
Very big.
The people who live in this house are, some of them are related, some of them aren't. Some of them are married, some of them aren't. You know, so it's a very we're trying to capture that, like in the set, some of that hodgepodgeness of who lives there. But at the core, though, we really wanted to ground this in as close to mid-1930s context as we can. So, Lydia, you're also kind of running props for us, and Holly, you're also running hair and makeup. So talk about that. Talk about that vibe that we're trying to capture with some of that.
Lydia, would you like to go first?
Yeah.
Sure. So in terms of props, we are raiding the costume shop. We're putting out
in a very clean and organized way.
Yeah. In a very clean. Yes, it is.
Please don't come for us.
It's a raid, as in we are searching for something. But we don't have everything we need in the costume shop, so we're also doing a lot of reaching out to community members, asking for things to borrow. We actually managed to just secure a typewriter. It's not as old-fashioned as would have been used in the 1930s, but it's
close. It's super close.
It is super close.
It's very close.
And it makes that nice clickety-clack noise. We are doing a lot of substituting of things, but we're really capturing the vibe, and we're putting on some... So the Sycamores are a chaotic family with a lot going on and a lot of interests. So we're also just pulling strange items and hiding them around the house like Easter eggs.
What was that device called? Metronome?
Yes, the metronome.
Was that the tick-tick-tick?
Yeah.
I hate that thing. What? It's so annoying.
The bell is annoying, but it's called
the bell.
If anyone happens to have a candy dish shaped like a skull, we would like to borrow that.
Okay.
And I think we're still looking for an aquarium.
And
what?
I got the snakes.
All right, we got snakes.
I have not read this play through enough. What the heck is
that's
this?
That's where the snakes live.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
You mean
the things that you get scared of.
Do you mean terrarium?
You said aquarium.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, a glass box.
Big I was so
glass
confused.
Cube.
Where is there fish involved? I just
terrarium.
There's a lot of crossover between like roles. So while I'm props and I'm Reba, everyone is kind of pitching in and helping each other. Right now, I'm actually doing a little bit of alteration on a dress that I have with me right here in my lap. And I would like to give a huge shout out to all the seamstresses who have given me their patience and time in helping me figure out the project.
Yeah, and what I like about this play is that I think the characters, the vibe in the household kind of hopefully mirrors in some way what it takes to put on a play.
Absolutely.
You're talking about those double roles. You're not only working on your artistic creative crafts, but there's a lot of technical things. Like all of you in here are working on props and painting sets and building sets. We were up here on Saturday or on Sunday for like 4 hours just putting this house together.
Yeah.
And it tired Ivan out so much that he was like, I'm sleeping in today, Jer.
Sunday was really, really straining.
Yeah,
We had to put up a bunch of walls. We had to screw them all together with pieces of wood. We had to put hinges on them. We had to paint some of them, I believe. Mm-hmm. And
we still
do. It looks really good,
mm-hmm.
but there's some holes that need to be filled up.
Oh, yeah. Our math was wrong in some places.
Yeah.
We are performers, not
architects.
Yeah, we're not carpenters.
Go ahead.
I hope my math wasn't wrong for those trims, though.
No, we have plenty of trim. No, yeah. What you did was great.
Going from building sets to building people's faces, Holly, what do you have on makeup?
What a segue. From now on, Delaney will be hosting this show.
Yes. So
that's my chair now, Jared.
Something to understand about the 1930s is that there's a lot of there's a lot of things to consider. So in the 30s, we all know about the Great Depression and how it sort of like depleted all the supplies and such. But due to the rise in women getting their own rights and receiving equal pay and all these sorts of things contributing to feminism, I had a point and I forgot where it was going. Point is, the main source of places where I could research finding makeup were mainly for actresses. And that's sort of how it is until, I'd say about the 40s. So finding the balance. So what I'm gathering is that there was a very unnatural look in the 30s. And thankfully, due to being able to do stage makeup, and stage makeup is often not that pretty up close, so
yeah.
So not many characters will go full on out with the arched eyebrows and the red lip, which, by the way, red lip is always very, very.
It's never not in style.
It's never
right?
not in style. I mean, recently as of times, but that's an entirely different topic. Do not get me started.
But they had these. I mean, I've been watching a lot of movies from the 1930s, and there's this really interesting, like, it wasn't always full lips with the lipstick. It was like full in the middle and then kind of tight there. That little Betty Boop kind of look.
That was definitely a thing in the 20s. And I'm probably in the 30s too, because oftentimes the fashion will repeat in patterns, as so many things do in history.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Specifically makeup. But again, all the things for researching makeup in the 30s is a bit askew due to what they used for makeup and due to the TV at that time, because they had to use an exaggerated version because of coloring, and there wasn't color in the 30s. There was noise, though. Getting out of silent films. But regardless, there was they had to use like in the 30s they actually had to use like greens and blues behind the screen, and they had to use these weird false eyelashes with like little balls at the end. It was like really, it was really interesting
to make all the grays look fuller and stuff.
Yes, exactly. So what I'm thinking is I'm going to lean a little bit more towards, like, it's not going to look exactly like 50-50 to the 30s, but it will definitely give that vibe. For our more extravagant characters, like Grand Duchess Olga Katerina.
It's so much fun, guys.
I will definitely be hoping to give her a red lip. Because, and I want to give the red lip to as many characters as possible, but red does pop.
Mr. Kirby,
out a lot.
You're getting red lip.
Yeah. During the time she was talking, I was imagining Kirby, you know, this upstreet Wall Street businessman, just going into this household with like full on eyelashes that are just out, like 3 inches out, and like big red lips, and it's just so funny to me.
Okay, so what I'm hearing is that maybe we should shift, and we're gonna do the show in grayscale now.
Oh, no, let's go photo negative.
Ooh, yo.
That would actually be super fun. That'd be super fun.
Imagine.
We did a grayscale show when we did Night of the Living Dead 4 or 5 years ago. Oh. And it was so much fun because we did it in grayscale, but all of the blood and gore was actually red.
Oh, wow. That's so cool.
But I think the very last performance, we ran out of gray makeup.
What?
And so some people had, you know, it's kind of a patch kind of work. That stuff is expensive. But that was a lot of fun.
Heaven knows we don't get enough funding as a theater program.
And lighting a black and white show or a grayscale show, it's actually pretty easy.
That would make sense because you don't have to worry about coloring, right?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so excited for hair. I'm so excited.
Talk to us about, okay, so we got Ivan here who's got, you know, a pretty typical, you know, teenager haircut. But what are you going to do to make him look like a 1930s Wall Street?
Just take some of my spit and just go.
There's this one scene in Spy Kids.
Oh my gosh.
And it's this, what's his name? Antonio.
Banderas.
He like combs back his son's hair and it's like very tight. And he's just combing it. It's just like. And that's what I'm going to be imagining. So all the guys are going to get their hair slicked back and yep. combed back with a whole bunch of gel and hairspray.
You might need a little trim there, Ivan. Also.
David also needs a trim, man.
David needs a trim. And Ivan needs a trim. Ronan got his cut.
Yeah.
He looks great.
It didn't matter that much for Ronan, I'm going to be honest.
He's a grandpa.
So Ronan plays... Oh, yeah. You know, let's take some time and go through like the cast list.
Oh yes. Okay.
So we have Mr. and Mrs. Kirby here already, and who plays your son?
That is David. Don't know his last name.
Watson. David William Watson II.
David Watson is our son, even though he's a senior and we are both freshmen.
He's a junior.
He's a junior.
Yeah.
Oh, that's news to me.
And David's been killing it this year. David was in Romeo and Juliet was a state finalist at a competition this year. So. Okay, so let's run through like the Sycamore family. We got Grandpa.
Grandpa. Ronan
played by Hinman. Ronan Hinman, Sr.
Paul.
Penny and Paul.
Sycamore, good lord. Played by Tina Beristoff.
Mm-hmm.
And
Penny is
Ariadna Sordos Chicas.
Whoa. Yes. Sorts of chicas. Yes.
And then Essie Carmichael. Their kids, me. Yes. I play the eldest daughter, Essie Carmichael, who is married to Edmund Carmichael.
And what's Essie's thing?
Essie is a.
We haven't talked about Essie.
Oh, my gosh. Boy. Essie is a aspiring ballerina. By aspiring, I mean she stumbles on her feet. which will probably happen.
Well, your ballet teacher is.
Oh
my gosh.
My ballet teacher is Boris Kolenkov, played by Allison Otto.
Sorry, the best character in the show.
Oh,
well,
yes.
Objectively.
One of them.
Scene stealer.
Absolute scene stealer.
Yes.
I actually know someone who's going to be coming to watch. And he did. He played the role of Mr. Kolenkov in his high school production.
What? Stop. No way!
Oh,
yes.
Oh my god.
Oh, that's awesome.
Every time
he got very excited when he found out we were going to be doing this.
Every time I bring up this show, just about everybody I talk to did this show in high school. So yeah.
we're
carrying on
a
tradition.
That.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I've never heard of this show before.
Well,
neither.
I mean, you're what, 12? So, you know.
12? Oh, I am 15 years old, Jared.
Sorry.
Sorry, yeah, age kind of slips away because when you go into like 60 plus, you just kind of.
What are you, 75?
Careful there. 60 plus.
And you were saying we didn't have a senior.
And so you're married to Ed. What's Ed's thing? Ed is played by Caitlin Shia.
Yes, and Ed is a
xylophonist
and a printer. And he also makes masks.
A printer, a mask maker, but is also maybe a seditionist because he's printing out political pamphlets might be
pro-anarchist.
Yeah, pro-anarchist.
He's also kind of paranoid because he gets.
He's very paranoid.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yes, very paranoid.
I wonder if he has a copy of the Anarchist's Cookbook.
Oh, my gosh.
from back then.
No, that came out much later.
Okay, and who else is the family? Your sister. Who's your
sister? My sister is Alice Sycamore, and she is played by Tatiana Otto. Woo! Who is a senior?
Who is a senior? Yes. We have Reba. Reba, who's your
Donald?
Who's your boyfriend?
Is my boyfriend, and he is played by Nathaniel
Acevedo.
Acevedo, and we are kind of like, well, this show is couple heavy, so everyone is very excited, like. Oh, Donald and Reba, they're so cute together. Oh, I wonder if Tony and Alice are going to get together. I hope they have their wedding in our living room.
Yeah, everyone has, like, a pair. Even Kolenkov, because the Grand Duchess is kind of his pair.
You're right.
I think so.
It doesn't have to be romantic.
It's just good friends.
And Boris is just a good friend of the family. And absolutely. There's some friends that come by that just swing by, like Gay Wellington.
Played
by Casey Martin.
No, is Gay Wellington the only one without a match?
I'm pretty sure Gay Wellington is the mother of the.
There's the potential of. There's a hint in there about Gay Wellington and Depenna. Played by Ash.
I forgot about that.
I was just thinking about how the platonic duos, like Gay Wellington and Penny, and Mr. DePinna, played by Ash McBride, and Paul, because Paul also has Grandpa,
but
Grandpa had the milkman.
But Grandpa had the milkman. Ooh, yes.
R.I.P. Milkman.
What if? After the show, I become the milkman in that situation. Kirby becomes Grandpa's pair.
We're in a time loop.
Oh my gosh.
And let's see, Ryan Glade, River Pikus, who are playing FBI G-Men, and Jeff playing a tax,
Mr. Henderson
playing
the IRS,
IRS tax accountant who's trying to track down Grandpa.
I'm so excited for my dad to watch this show.
Oh my gosh.
he'll get a kick out of it.
Part of the reason I really wanted to tell my dad about this radio show, but I knew we'd be talking about the play a lot, and he did not want any spoilers.
Oh, okay.
So I told him, like, yeah, it's a 1930s play. It's like humor. It's Rome. It's like star-crossed lovers. He's like, okay, that's it. That's it. I don't want to.
It's a fast play. There's always something going on.
Yes.
And it's
everybody's talking like we're about to show off
going once, going twice.
Sold.
Wait a second.
Let's hear Ivan do his Mr. Kirby.
This is my voice. This is what I use for my character. He's a very Boston. Boston character. No, I don't know what to say about
it. Transatlantic.
Transatlantic.
It's transatlantic.
What it's called, apparently, by Jim.
Should we do our voices?
Oh my gosh.
Yes. Can we go around?
Okay. So I we heard Ivan. Oh, you want?
I gotta do my warm-ups. The great owners never something to change. No, nothing of the nature of the change. I think the candy's hardening up now, Miss Essie.
there's Reba. Let's hear Mrs. Kirby.
Mrs. Kirby? Okay. Really, Tony, this is most embarrassing.
And now let's hear your Olga.
I'm trying to think of like a good line that. Thank you. You are most kind.
Oh, yeah, we do have some Russian. Yes, we have some great Russian accents.
I love Russian accents.
And then we heard a little bit of Essie, but you want to.
Okay, hold on. I'm thinking of a line. My, that kitchen's hot. Oh, well, I just can't imagine why anybody else would ever want to think of a line that they could say. I can surely never remember anything unless prompted. But she's very dreamy.
Yes, so it's the sound. The voices you guys came up with, like, holy cow. It's very impressive.
Mine was inspired off of, like Snow White and Lottie LaBeouf from The Princess and the Frog. So that was the kind of inspiration I had for at least like personality-wise and like demeanor-wise. I wanted to try and emulate that. And voice-wise, Snow White, because she has a very breathy air to her and she's very enchanting, but she's also very, very Pinkie Pie and like, oh my God, that's Pie. Mr. Colin Cobb.
Yeah.
We have a couple minutes left. Let's see. So we got so the show this weekend at the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium, Friday at 7 p.m., Saturday at 2 p.m. and 7 p.m. and Sunday at 2 p.m. We have four opportunities to come see this. It's a hilarious play. There are some huge laugh out loud moments, some very tender moments too, but this really is, I kind of hate this cliche, but this really is a show where you seriously just literally sit back, relax.
Yeah.
Have fun with these characters. They're rich characters. And what you guys have been putting together over the past 5 weeks is like you guys have locked in, and it's been really impressive to watch your process. We still have some tech things and some props and stuff like that to clean up, but it's going to be a great time. So we got about 30 seconds left. Give me your best 10-second pitch to watch the show.
Come see our show. You'll never regret it.
Please.
Oh, please do join us. It'll be enchanting.
Y'all learn about my Wall Street qualities.
Oh, my gosh. The jokes in this play. Y'all have no idea. The Inuit, the jokes are so good.
You gotta save it.
Sorry.
Well, it'll be a rootin' tootin' good time. Bring the whole family down.
Bring the whole
family.
Maybe
not.
So thank you, Lydia, Delaney, Holly, and Ivan, for spending your lunch hour with us here at KMXT.
Thank you.
Let's go watch the show. You can't take it with you this weekend, and I'll see you after school at practice.
See you later.
See you later.
See ya.